Hello, welcome to the Long Shot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Pooya Hadari. Pooya has been in business for 12 years across seven industries, outsourced sales for multi-billion dollar companies and celebrity entrepreneurs, helped 1,000 plus people in 20 countries. A lot of value to talk about here. Here is Pooya Hadari.
All right, I'm here with Pooya Hadari. We're talking in the pregame. We got some nice segues to start this off. I'm sitting looking in the background. He's got a chess table there, a little chess game. So we're going to get into it, like, you know, and he likes the strategy of all that. You know, I was like, are you good? He's like, no, but my wife is like, awesome. We're going to get into like a lot of business, you know, you got a lot of like, you know, just help people, you know, make a lot of money and help them with their business. So that's what we want to get into that, but we got to get into what built this guy. How did he get to where he is? So let's go back. Where were you born, boy? What did mom and dad do for a living? All those fun questions that I like to ask.
Sounds good. Well, first things first, thank you for having me on. It's been great just chatting with you already before we even got this recorded. So I feel like we already have a great connection. It's always fun doing a podcast where we already have a genuine connection. So thank you for having me. To get into the background a little bit, I was born and raised in Iran. So a whole different side of the world, whole different culture, whole different mindset. A lot of that is what really made me, because when you have that type of perspective, you can't take opportunities for granted that we have in the US and Canada. It's just a completely different ballgame. So I was born and raised there. I moved over here when I was 10 years old and pretty much always had this drive. I wanted a different life. I wanted to do something with the opportunities that I had available to me now, because, again, it was so evident that I wouldn't have had this if I just by chance didn't move over here like so many other people. And I just figured, you know, I want that lifestyle. I want to also do something meaningful. I also want to, you know, give back. I want to maximize the opportunity that I've been given. And that led me into wanting to pursue the education of business and all of that. So that's a bit about where I was born and how I moved over here. If you want to ask any follow-up questions, we'll stay there for now.
I'll have plenty more questions, of course, you know, because I'm a nosy bastard. But I do want to just a couple things that come right off the bat. One is I'm from LA. So there's a big Persian community in LA. And then also, I love playing backgammon. To segue back into chess, you know, Persian and backgammon is like a big, there's a huge, it's synonymous almost. Mm-hmm. There's a whole, it almost seems like, can you touch upon the culture, not to stereotype, but there's a milieu. There is a type of je ne sais quoi that Persian immigrants have come to America, whether it's anywhere, Canada, you know, and there's just like, almost like I have a Jewish background. So it's almost like, no, this is screw it. We're just going to do it this way. It gets it done. There's passion, everything down from the food to business. There's passion. How could you explain that? It's ineffable almost.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's definitely a certain stereotype, or I guess just a certain trait that comes with Persian immigrants, especially if you're from LA, because the Persian LAs are a little different. I think all of us recognize that. And, you know, I don't want to spend too much time there because I don't want anybody mad at me. But
Persian LAs are... LA. You know, I'm talking passion. This is a compliment. This is like something I see. I told my daughters the other day, it's like, you see immigrants come, because I was just in LA, you see immigrants come over, Persian immigrants, they barely know the language, but they have passion, they have go-get, they don't give a fuck. They're like, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it. I don't know, you know, I don't even have all the rules. They have high standards, but they don't like give themselves a lot of rules, and they end up being successful.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it partly comes from the culture too, because Persians, we grow up negotiating everything. Everything's negotiable. So the sales, the business acumen sort of comes with it. And, you know, the rest of the culture, like you said, we play backgammon, all these things that we do, it's very much intertwined. Now, backgammon, I don't know if it's Greek, Turkish, Persian influence, but it's from that region regardless. It's all intertwined. So it's very much a business culture. And I feel like a lot of Persians are very pragmatic, just like I am myself, very much down to the point. We want to skip the fluff and kind of get to, you know, whatever it is, the decision that we're making. So, you know, I feel like some Persians are very analytical as well. So they'll, you know, do the math and the numbers and they have to think about things and all of that. I feel like we're in two different categories. I'm not in that analytical sector. I'm more in the pragmatic side, where, you know, I value my time more than money. So if I'm going to make a decision, I'll make that decision sooner than later. So I feel like we're all very much just business oriented. And like you said, pairing that with the immigrant mentality and moving over here and seeing the opportunities, I feel like, you know, we all want to capitalize on it. So it's definitely a trait that comes with the entire Persian community. I see that as well. So, you know, luckily I've taken advantage of that.
All that clicks with me. I've always been attracted and appeal. That appeals to me. That mentality, that type of lifestyle, that type of thinking. So, you know, at the dinner table, mom, dad, you know, growing up, what would you say was the je ne sais quoi, the milieu, the atmosphere of what was going on there? And let's segue into school and all that other stuff that kind of like, we'll get into business.
Yeah. So, you know, I think you'll enjoy this. I'll share something that I don't think I've ever shared before. I actually have, I know for a fact, I've never shared this on a podcast before, and I probably do 2-3 podcasts a month that my PR team schedules me in and all that. So I've never shared this, and I'm fairly certain I haven't shared this in any of my own content. I like to leave family things really, you know, on the personal side. And a lot of my business and what I focus on is sales, business related content. And I just focus there because I feel like, you know, that's really where I have the most experience and where I want to add value. So I'm not the type of person that likes to share all the personal things and whatnot, but I think this will help. I think this will give some context to the audience, maybe add some more layer to my own character. And this is the first time being shared ever on your podcast.
Awesome.
So I was actually born in Iran, right? And I moved here when I was 10. So that entire time, my dad was already moving around, going to different countries, and finally settled and was able to bring us over here. So I actually didn't meet my dad for the first time till I was 10 years old. So I grew up with my grandmother, my mom, and my older sister. So raised by 3 females, and I had to sort of be the man of the house. I feel like in those type of scenarios, you either crumble completely or you raise up to the occasion, right? And I feel like I had to raise myself to that standard, to that occasion. And I have memories where I had to, you know, do things that a man of the house would have to do at a very young age, at 7 years old, 8 years old, whatever it might be. So, you know, that definitely put that fire inside me. That definitely added to, you could say, the masculine traits that I've cultivated, right? So, you know, growing up, you asked about the dinner table. It was very different from 0 to 10 years old than from 10 to whatever, right? I moved out when I was basically 17 years old. And then was, you know, living on my own since then. So from 10 to 17 was completely different because now it was a complete family unit. And, you know, there is a happy ending to that story. We did get reunited. And then, you know, I had that presence of my dad and learned a lot of lessons from him. The main one being work ethic. I don't know anybody that works as hard as he does. So it was very interesting. But of course, as you can imagine, a lot of things came with that upbringing, you know, so just wanted to share that.
All right, 17 years old. What do you get into? What's happening there?
So I went to first year university, and I went just with the sole purpose of wanting to enjoy that time of my life, just wanting to enjoy the university experience, live on campus, have fun, because I had no intention of pursuing formal education. I knew that. I made that very clear to my family. Everybody knew, because from high school, I was already reading sales books, business books. I came on to my first mentor that I took to heart, Jim Rohn. I talk about him all the time. I had a mentor in person who was directly mentored by Jim Rohn. So she would tell me all kinds of stories about, you know, behind the scenes with Jim Rohn and all of that. So I really tuned into his teachings, and I spent every dollar I had just doing little side hustles and jobs and whatnot at 16, 17 years old, going to business conferences all across the US. I remember doing a drive to Florida, probably took about 24 hours, you know, taking a bus to Chicago. I went to all kinds of different cities for business conferences, making connections. So I was doing that at a young age. And I just knew self-education is the route for me. I just knew I want to get into business. I knew that's the path that I want to take. So formal education was just not even in the question for me. It wasn't in the equation. So I went to university at 17. I was 17 turning 18 because my birthday's late. It's in November. And that 1 year I lived on campus. As soon as I finished that 1 year, came back home, and I just moved out on my own. And then I was doing sales jobs and whatnot and just continued basically from there. So that's why I moved out at 17, and I wanted that independence as of then.
Okay, dude, I see so many similarities. I was raised by my mother, my grandmother, my sister. I have 2 older brothers, but my dad wasn't around because he's a Rolling Stone. But also, I didn't want to go to college. I was like, I wanted to be an entrepreneur, an actor, and a stand-up comedian. And I was like, I only knew that self-education was what we're going to get me those things. So that's what I did. I love it. So you got into Tony Robbins too, obviously, with Jim Rohn, right?
Of course. Yeah. He was one of the, you know, main mentees of Jim Rohn. And also, I think Tony Robbins has a lot of great information. Even to this day, you know, it's worth revisiting. I have a couple of his books behind me here. It's just worth looking at what he's done. He's obviously, you can't deny success and his mindset. And he also built himself up from ground zero. So yeah, I got into all those guys. I've read any and every book you can imagine, all the, you know, classic stuff. So people ask me about morning routines or books and whatever. I always tell them, you know, like, I've tried it all. I've done it all. I was waking up at 5 a.m. when I was 17 years old. Like, I've done it all. You know, I've figured things out, what works, what doesn't work, what I like, what I don't like. And that's why I've come to the conclusion, just to kind of give you my takeaway here, that it's not about what works, it's about what works for you. There's a million things that work, but it's about what works for you over a long period of time.
That's such a fucking simple but great point, because that is what you have to find out what's going to be feasible for your routine, what's going to fit well for you so you can get synergy and make that really happen. Because conceptually, you're like, well, that's what they did, but it's like, it's not clicking. So you find out how it can fit into for you. So let's go there. How do you, because you have a really, you know, on paper, and I want to find out what the details is of it. I want to get in the weeds. Mm-hmm. What is that? How does that grow? How do you go from the sales, you're doing sales, to, you know, helping others, to creating wealth that you created?
Sure. So yeah, I'll tell you sort of the sequence of events that happened. So I got into sales at a very young age. Again, I wanted to really get into business, and I felt like sales is the door into business. I felt like if I can learn how to sell, you're selling a product or a service in exchange for credit or cash, right? You're getting money for goods and services. I figured if I can control that, if I can, you know, add value to a business by doing that, I can get close to the management. I can work my way up the corporate ladder. I can just get my foot in the door. I felt like, you know, I learned that's the most important aspect of any business. And to this day, I believe client acquisition, client retention, the two most important metrics of any business, point blank, period. I don't care what product or service you have or what part of the world you live in. You know, I work with clients from Singapore to Australia to US to Europe, it doesn't matter. It's all the same fundamentals in play, right? So I wanted to get into sales. That's exactly what I did. And I worked in a variety of industries, 7 different industries to be specific, and was able to make my first 6 figures when I was 20 years old, 19 turning 20. And then I realized, okay, this is just a game that I got to get better at. I got to, you know, start to play more strategically, and that's how I can continue to build. So I went from sales and then to leadership positions. So I've been in every position: sales manager, general manager, director, general, you know, what, VP of sales, whatever, and started to manage teams and really get into that leadership aspect of things. And your podcast is Long Shot Leader, so we can talk about leadership. And then from there, I got with some partners and became a shareholder and a partner in a couple of different companies. And we started doing what's known as outsourced sales. So we would approach major corporations, like multi-billion dollar companies in the telecom space, healthcare space, and so on. And also some celebrity entrepreneurs, some well-known individuals. And we basically would do the hiring, the training, the developing of the sales teams, processes, and systems, put all of that in place. I was basically the front runner on those projects. So I was handling all of those things. And then from there, again, it was the right timing and opportunity for me to just venture out on my own and do exactly what I was doing, but extend that out internationally and also on my own terms.
What were some of those sweet spot businesses that you were kind of dealing with?
At the outsource sales stage?
Yeah. Like what you said, there was like, you know, several industries that you kind of like, you know, you gravitated towards. What were they?
Yeah. So for myself, I worked in the fitness industry first on a variety of different fronts, whether it was in major gym chains, whether it was on the supplement nutrition side, whether it was on the actual personal training side of things. Since I was young, I was very interested in fitness. I used to be more interested in the bodybuilding side of things. Not anymore. I'm more into sports and martial arts and all of that nowadays. But I was always interested in fitness. Even to this day, I do a lot of biohacking. I fast every single day. I do long-term fast. I do all kinds of crazy stuff, which I love. So I was always interested in fitness. So I delved into that and paired that with sales, which I wanted to pursue. Then I got into the auto industry. Then I got into shipping and logistics. Then I got into trying to just refresh my memory here. After that, I got into telecom sales. I got into the healthcare space. I got into doing some sales training and basically outsource sales type of things with a couple of other companies before I ventured out on my own. So just a whole variety of industries.
So what would you say, what do you do now? What is this? How would you encapsulate and explain what you do right now?
Sure. Very simply summing it all up, it's consulting work. So it would be sales training and business consulting. So on one hand, I'm working with a lot of sales professionals or sales teams. On the other hand, I'm consulting a lot of smaller business owners and helping them, you know, accomplish their targets and goals and revenue metrics and whatever it might be, and helping them scale and basically implement the sales processes and systems and so on. So it's consulting work with a heavy emphasis on sales, client acquisition, and client retention.
Okay. So here's a good scenario, and I'll put it right in your wheelhouse. Richard Gasperi, old acquaintance, friend of mine, he started a protein, you know, company. Used to be, I think he was Mr. Olympia. Finally got it. I know he's Mr. Universe, but you familiar with Richard Gasperi?
Yeah, I'm definitely familiar with the name. Not as familiar as I am with some of the other guys, but yeah.
Okay. But you dealt in that space. So he's got a supplement company. Let's go back to him. He's just starting out. What are some universal key points and needle movers that you end up, you know, I know everybody's got a thumbprint. You know, every business person's a thumbprint. But what are some universal key bullet points that you go into that company and say, okay, this is usually what I see wrong. This is usually what we end up doing to fix that. And here's what, you know, so let's kind of get into a little bit of that.
Sure. I'll do my best to give you a couple key points that are, you know, applicable to everybody, even though we're talking about the supplement space. Also, right. It depends if he's going completely the online route or if he's looking to get into brick and mortar.
Well, he's starting online and then he wants to get in brick and mortar.
Okay. So I think a couple of key points that will be helpful to him and everybody else, regardless. First things first, I'll look at the product or the service that I'm providing, right? So in terms of supplements, I'll look at the actual product, especially in a hyper competitive space like that. The fitness industry is, you know, there's pros and cons. It's extremely competitive and anybody and everybody is in that space. But at the same time, that goes to show you there's a high demand for it. There's a high need. As long as we have bodies, we're going to have a need for that. So everybody's your market. The world is your oyster, as they say, right? Jim Rohn used to say, take care of your body is the only place you have to live, right? So the fitness industry is definitely a huge industry for you to capitalize on. So I think, you know, you could say he's in the right place, especially with his background and expertise, but I would look at the product or the service that I'm providing, because at the end of the day, I was talking about this actually on a podcast the other day. You could be the greatest salesperson ever and sell a ton of your products, but if the product's terrible, that's the worst thing you could have done, right? You're just building a terrible reputation for yourself. So I would recommend to focus on the fundamentals and the actual core, the internal stuff with your company before trying to expand or, you know, really scale fast, right? So I'll look at the product, make sure it's delivering the result, make sure it's high quality, premium. Nothing beats a high quality product, because word of mouth is still huge. It's still one of the number one metrics to really growing a business. And with social media, it's only amplified. You know, people will only, you know, pass on that word of mouth faster and at it on a bigger scale. So I would look at the product and the service. Then I would look at really the customer experience, the customer journey. What does that look like? Because you're not competing with every other supplement. You're competing with your prospect's last great experience, right? If you just look at it as I'm competing with every other supplement or every other business, you know, around the corner, you're not setting yourself up correctly. But if you look at it as whatever their last great experience was with a product or service similar to mine, that's what I'm competing with. That's what I'm looking to top. That's how people are going to remember you. That's how people are going to, you know, pass on the word. That's how people are going to create that referral ecosystem for you. So I would look at, you know, the product or the service itself, the customer experience, and then make sure I have the right processes and systems in place to be able to then make sure the business is duplicatable, make sure that, you know, revenues are duplicatable, make sure we know what works, and then just pour more into that. Just lean into that. You know, I have a good buddy of mine who actually has a multiple 8-figure supplement line. And at this point for him, it's just numbers, because he does a lot of, you know, ad spend and all of that. And he does a lot of split testing. He does a lot of playing with paid traffic. And for him, he's handled the fundamentals I just mentioned. So at this point, it's just really numbers for him to scale. So those are the three components I would look at initially.
Those are like great. That's a symphony of some great stuff. You know, incidentally, Google is now, you know, their algorithm that they just came out with recently is concentrating, or they're supposed to come out with any, if they haven't already, is the customer journey. You know, that's the new, you know, that's like the next panda and penguin algorithm for Google is the customer journey, and everything's gonna be judged on that.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's pretty interesting. It's harder to navigate as the, you know, that particular part of it, you know, but that's what we'll have to learn, you know, and like, you know, as far as e-commerce.
And it makes sense. I would understand why they would call it that, because again, too many entrepreneurs and business owners, I'm sure you'd agree with this, neglect that part of the business, you know, because there are tangible things in every business, and then there are the intangibles. And honestly, at this point in time, at this point in my life and my career, I can't really put a finger on which one's more important, but I would just tell you the intangibles are at least just as important as the tangibles. You know, some intangibles, for example, as an entrepreneur, as for the individual, not just the business, but on the individual side of things, would be judgment, for example. Judgment, you could say, is common sense. We both know common sense is not so common. So if you have the ability to make better decisions, if your judgment is more clear, your judgment is based on maybe prior experience as opposed to reading a book or theory, right? It's based on real experience. That judgment is going to separate you from everybody else that you're competing with, right? So some of these intangibles are huge. The customer experience is sort of, it's tangible because you can, you know, create a step-by-step, but it is an intangible concept that you need to think about. What is my customer journey? What is my customer experience within that journey? I think these are intangibles that need to be thought about, and a lot of people neglect it in my experience.
You know, let's talk about, you get to a certain point, you know, your product's great. You have the rhythm going, but now you're, it's that point from where you hit that 30-40% mark on the left to right graph, you know, and you're still rising. What are the key points that you've seen in businesses with the problems of scaling? You know, what separates the person that scales well? They're all doing well from 0 to 60, but how do they get from 60 to 120? And what are some of the key points of how they can scale from that point?
That's a great question. First of all, I would say you're being super generous saying they're all doing well from 0 to 60 or whatever that was.
Because the ones that are.
The ones that make it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The 1% who make it do well. Yeah,
there's a lot of people that don't even like hit 40, you know, the engine blows out.
Exactly. Everybody else barely even gets started. So I would tell you, yes, for the ones that do well and make it to a certain point, whether that's a 10,000 revenue, 100,000 revenue, whatever that metric is where you plateau in your business, to scale beyond that, in my experience and what I see on a day-to-day basis, just working with business owners all over the world, it's this right here. To the degree that you can either systemize your business or hire out is to the degree that you can scale. It usually boils down to those two things, either systemizing your business so that, again, it's more duplicatable, it's more streamlined, it's more convenient. I mean, look at, you know, the biggest businesses on this planet. Look at Amazon, look at Apple, look at Tesla, look at all these companies, right? Convenience is key, right? So they're systemized, they're streamlined, they're convenient for the end consumer. So to the degree that your business is systemized, and also depending on what type of business we're talking about, to the degree that you hire out, so you actually delegate some responsibilities, whether it's outsourced, in-house, whatever it might be. I always like in-house better than outsourced. I pretty much have everything in-house. I come from the outsourced world. So I know the lack of standard there could be, even with the best of the best. So personally, I think nothing beats in-house. So it depends how much you want to protect your name, your brand. For me, that's important. The brand, the name is very important. So I like things in-house. But regardless, whether it's in-house or outsourced, to the degree that you delegate responsibilities, that you allow yourself to expand and you know, grow bigger, is to the degree that you can scale on that chart as well in terms of your revenues. Because a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners are a one man, one woman show, right? They try to do anything and everything themselves. They wear 20 different hats. So those two would be the two metrics I would look at in terms of scaling. There's one more thing I want to talk about after this, but first I'll let you touch on that.
Yeah, well, yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, it's like the automations, processes, and the leveraging, when you're going 60 miles per hour, you've done that at that point. But how fast, efficient, and well can you go? Can you use those automations, those processes? Actually, processes first, then the automations, and then the leveraging. How well can you do those? And then it comes down to the decisions that you were talking about, the unconscious competence at that point of doing so many reps to where you're able to implement the right decision at the right time, without even quantifying it, because you don't have time for that. Sometimes you spreadsheet that shit out, you know, but then like, it's the person that's gone through so many reps that has that unconscious competence to make the quick decision, because speed is so valuable. That's my input on that.
Yeah, 100%. And the other thing that I was just going to touch on is a lot of people get sidetracked and they want to do 20 different things. And it's one of the biggest red flags that I see. Anytime I speak to business owners or entrepreneurs, especially in the younger crowd, because obviously I work with a lot of younger people as well who are inspired, who want to get into business or get into sales, whatever it might be. And, you know, they're working in this job and doing this business and trying to study as well and doing 10 different things. It's just not going to happen. The one thing I tell them all the time is I can guarantee you 100%, right? And I'm not a naysayer. I'm not a negative person by any measure. So if it's coming from me, you better listen, right? I tell them, I guarantee you 100%, you're not going to succeed at all these things, at least not at the same time. So it comes down to a process of elimination. You know, what are you going to prioritize? Is your business your priority? Is school your priority? Is, you know, one of your three businesses your priority? I mean, which one is it? Because the reality is you can't compete at the top of the mountain, in the top 1% with everybody else who are committing, you know, 12, 14, 16 hours a day to that business. And you're trying to do 10 different things. It's just not going to happen. That's not how it works. So I feel like that level of distraction or generalization is usually a big mistake that I see and a reason that people can't scale.
You know, I run into that, you know, because I have a lot of passions. You know, I always said I want to be an entrepreneur and a stand-up comedian and an actor. You know, two things that have always been, you know, for me that have never left is to be an entrepreneur first and a stand-up comedian. And, you know, one is always, you know, dominated more than the other, and that's being an entrepreneur. But, you know, I always say if you have to, was it Tony Robbins talks about net time? If you're going to make a decision to do those things, try to see how much net time you could tack on to those things. Like how can one of those things complement the other? You know, mm-hmm. What are you doing? You know, it kind of goes back to like processes, you know, it's like one takes priority, but that's a big dance. And that's something that sometimes you might leave something on the table because somebody's listening out there. It's like, I don't want to give up my passion of this, but I got to do that. But one is going to have to be dominant. You know,
yeah,
and then processes for that.
Exactly. And, you know, to your point, there are different ways to look at this. So with what you want to do, it sounds like they all complement each other, right? So stand-up comedian, actor, entrepreneurship, you telling me earlier how you were doing filmmaking and all of that. So that all goes hand in hand. It really, your podcasting, that all goes hand in hand. If you look at Joe Rogan, perfect example, right? Stand-up comedian, does the UFC commentating. What else does he do? He just opened a comedy store, right? He's got all these things going on. And then obviously, you know, supplements and all that with his passions. But first of all, even if you look at him as an example, I just named him off the top of my head. But even if you just look at him, he built most of his real money from the shows that he was on, which was one centralized focus, Fear Factor and whatever else he did, where he made real money. Then he even talks about this in his own story, right? Then he said, okay, now I got money. That's handled. I can do whatever I want. I can, you know, tap into all my passions, and everything he does is more out of passion, right? So even then, it was one centralized focus that actually created the wealth that allowed for all these other arms and branches, right? If you look at a Tony Robbins, for example, it was his main business that got him to where he was. Now he's involved in 1,000 different companies, right? But Tony Robbins didn't start like that because he didn't have the name, the brand recognition, the capital, the energy, the know-how, any of that to be involved in 1,000 businesses, right? He had to establish himself and then venture out into that. So for me personally, I feel like that's how it works. Anybody that I look at the top of the game, they built all their wealth in one main source, and then they tapped into all these other sources.
Yeah, I think you're hitting on something that's actually big. You know, I think the heart, you know, I just telling my daughters, both of them, the hardest times is when you do something in the beginning. So because, you know, like I've done my entrepreneurial business that I'm in now, I've been an entrepreneur since I was like 17, but this particular business, I've had it for 22 years. The hardest time is when you start something. I'm starting another branch of another business that's, you know, closely related to this business I do now, but it's the beginning of it. Until you could put the automations and the leveraging and then the processes in place, because even like podcasting, that took a chunk. Like there's a new skill set, right? So mm-hmm. When you're in the beginning of process, and then I guess, like you said, you know, after you put those things in place, there's a bit of like, because good business every day shouldn't be like, so like, you know, all hands on deck, you know, pressure, especially with your employees, right? Mm-hmm. Should be sustainable.
Right.
What are some, anything you could add to that, you know, in your je ne sais quoi of like, you know, like what you've dealt
with?
Yeah.
So I definitely agree with you. I think, you know, whenever you're starting something new, a new business, a new venture, whatever it might be, that's where, you know, you have all the fear, the doubt, you know, the imposter syndrome, all of that is there. So you just have to really, the way you build confidence in yourself and in all of that is by, first of all, very simply put, just doing the work. You build that by keeping the promises you make to yourself, as the saying goes, right? So when you make promises to yourself, when you make commitments, when you say, I'm going to do X, Y, Z, you keep those. And then that continues to reinforce your confidence. Also, doing the work gets results. It's as simple as that. This is why personally, I don't know about you, and sometimes I offend people with this, but it is what it is. I'm going to be completely transparent anytime I can, right? Personally, I'm not a big fan of the whole law of attraction, the secret and all of that. I believe in the law of action. I believe in doing things, getting the job done. I hope all my competitors, you know, go listen to The Secret and sit on their couch and try to manifest their future while I'm up at 4 a.m. grinding, working, setting the foundations, right? We'll see who's where in 10 years, right? So it's as simple as that. Doing the work builds the confidence. So I think when you're new and just starting out, yeah, keep the promises you make to yourself, you know, do the work, continue to reinforce your confidence, and then you'll see results sooner than later. And if you don't, by the way, you will probably just have to adjust, pivot, tweak what you're doing, because, you know, you might be in a business that nobody wants your product or service. I don't know. It could be that you're not going to get the results. So you might have to also be aware and make adjustments throughout the process.
You know, it's interesting, the secret, you know, because it's like more car analogies. You know, it's like the wheels, but there's no engine, you know, because they talk about the laws of attraction, all that, you're going to need to, you know, have some elements of that, you know. And what's interesting is when somebody, you know, setting goals or, you know, following through with, you know, what you say you really want and you're going to do, you set your dates and then you take, you know, it's a Tony Robbins thing, it's just a, you know, personal development 101. Take immediate action, many other things after that. But, you know, as far as, you know, a goal setting, and you know, this would be a nice segue near, as we come to like near the, you know, our tail end here, you know, I always ask everybody at the end, you know, what's your 5 to 10 to 15 year plan? Do you plan that far in advance? And also let's talk about in general for anybody that's trying to do that.
That's a great question. And I feel like I used to. So the answer to that would really be, I used to think much, much longer term. Nowadays, I have a an idea of what I want that future to look like the next 10, 15, 20, 30 years. But I just acknowledge the reality that there's no way possible, unless I have a time machine, there's no way I could predict what it's going to look like or who I will be at that point, right? And I've come to terms that, first of all, long-term goals are really a procrastination mechanism. Point blank, period. Nobody can argue with me because I'm talking from real experience. I'm talking about myself. I was writing down my goals since 16 years old, right? So I was telling you, you know, I was waking up. I remember this very clearly. I was around 16 or 17, somewhere in that time. I would wake up at 5 a.m. I would make a bowl of oatmeal and some egg whites, because again, I was into bodybuilding. I would sit down and I would watch Jim Rohn for about an hour. And then I would do gratitude journal. I'd write down my goals. I did the whole spiel, right? Which again, I don't know if I'd recommend that now. It takes a lot of mental energy just to do all that. I would rather just get to work. But again, I was trying out these routines. So I would write all these long-term goals. You know, this is where I want to be by 25. This is where I want to be by 30. But I had no idea who I would become by the time I was 25, right? So yes, there's value in writing down your goals, because what I realized is a lot of the goals I would write down, I would achieve a lot faster, years faster than I even wrote them down, right? I remember this one specifically. I used to always write down, I live in a luxury condo in the heart of the city, and by 25. And I was doing that by 20 or 21. So, you know, because it was so top of mind for me and it was something that I was actually striving towards, it did happen, and it did happen a lot sooner than I even expected, right? But that being said, it's good to goal set, and I still have goals, but my goals now are 3 months to 12 months, because that's a time frame where I can get to work today. I can get on that today. You know, there's urgency there. And if you have big goals in the next 3 to 12 months, you know, even if you miss those huge goals, you're still going to be in a very good position and you're set up for the next 3, 5, 7, 10 years, right? And, you know, going back to Jim Rohn again, because it's been a central focus of this conversation, Jim Rohn and Tony Robbins. Yeah. Jim Rohn used to always say, you don't set goals for the goals themselves. You set goals for the person you have to become to achieve the goal, right? He used to say, it's not about what you're getting, it's about who you're becoming, mm-hmm. right? So it's huge. And I've always looked at it that way. And I realized as I matured and as I got more experience in life and in business, that, you know, it's not about these long-term goals. Like I want a private jet. I want this and that. Okay, that's great if you want that, but who knows what you're going to really want, where your priorities are going to be in 10, 20 years. So for me, yeah, I have a vision of really, it's honestly, it's really who I want to be at that age. You know, some of the things that I want to do, some of the lifestyle that I want to have, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years from now, whatever it might be. But in terms of goals, there are no, you know, specific tangible goals. I focus on 3 to 12 months, and I focus on just getting better day by day, getting physically harder and mentally sharper every single day. That's the highest priority. It's number one focus. I think everything else will follow.
I love it. You know, in stand-up comedy, once again, there's your probable show. You write out your sets and everything, but you have a probable show because the most important thing is a relationship with the audience. You need to be able to react. Same thing in business. You know, it's like you have a probable plan, but you have to be able to pivot. So that said, what specifically, you know, is on the horizon for you for the next 12 months?
That's a great question. I'll answer that. But something funny that just came to mind, I wanted to tell you, because I think you would enjoy this. I don't know if you'd be surprised by this or not, but I actually study a lot of stand-up comedians. Does that surprise you?
No, I'm not you. I've heard talking to you in the short amount of time that I've known you. I'm like this, and looking at that chess table back there, and he's an analytical guy. And I just, you know, knowing that you listen to Jim Rome and you're a personal development guy and how you used to wake up and eat that oatmeal and egg whites. No, that doesn't surprise me.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah. Cause you're just talking. And every time you reference stand-up comedy, I'm just thinking, I haven't really talked to anybody, at least not recently, that we talk about stand-up comedians or stand-up comedy or just the arts and all of that. But I'm tuned into a lot of that. And it's interesting because I feel like it's never come up in conversation. It's never come up in on a business podcast. But this is something I actually really enjoy. You're tapping into more of what I'm passionate about. So it's interesting. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, all those guys, like, you know, the Seinfelds, the Joe Rogans, the whatever, Louis C.K.'s, all those guys, I've studied them all. I've looked at their stories. I actually, funny enough, I bought the Seinfeld book. I think it's called Is This Anything? And I thought it's a book about his story in his life. So I bought it. I'm listening to the audiobook. And then I realized it's all jokes. The entire book is like 30-second jokes. And then I was like, oh, okay, I don't know if I want to listen to this. But yeah, I thought it was about his life. So anyways, I just wanted to share that. I feel like it's interesting.
You know, Seinfeld, not that we're going to get into comedians right now. And I'm also, you know, because I've taken a long gestation period of doing stand-up and I'm starting again in June. So, and it I have a roundabout way that it's kind of going to be aiding my business a little bit that I'm launching also because I got to leverage. But, you know, Seinfeld, he doesn't get into any personal stuff, you know, as we're like other people are more personal driven. He's actually specifically just like observational. He doesn't want to get in. You never hear him talk about too much personal stuff. Like, yeah, I was sitting there in the Hamptons with my wife one day, you know, I guess maybe we don't want to hear about that. But
yeah, you know where he goes into some personal stuff, but I heard him on the Tim Ferriss podcast once. Yeah. This was a while ago, and he shared a lot of his structures. He shared his workout routine, I remember. He shared how he writes each day. He's talking about that thing he talks about a lot where you connect the chains or the links. And he's like, each day, just don't break the chains each day and can basically write every day. And he shared some of his personal practices, which was interesting to me, which led me to buy his book. And then I found out it's just a bunch of jokes.
Right. Some comedians will, like, you know, Richard Pryor, you know, is big influence for me. They'll just spill their guts to, you know, because like, look, this is it. I'm gonna lay it all out, you know, as to where, you know, he is like, if he's going to talk about something personal, he's going to talk about like how he's writing every day, you know, or what the process.
Right. I see
like
what you mean. Yeah.
All right. So your 12 months, you know, do you have any, you know, particular things that you're going to be doing with your business in 12 months from now? Just curious what you know, we're going to hear about, you know, Puyo, what's happening with Puyo? Oh yeah, he's doing that. Oh yeah, he said he was going to do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just going to be more of scaling and growing what I'm doing. I love to work with a lot of entrepreneurs and business owners. Yeah. One of the ways that I do that right now is I have a Inner Circle group. It's a private group where I'm working with a lot of individuals at the same time. Something I'm very passionate about because it's a diverse group from all over the world and all different industries. And I get to learn a lot myself because I can see the commonalities in all these different companies, businesses, industries, markets, economies, and so on. So that's something I'm really passionate about. I want to continue to scale that out. I'm going to be doing a lot of work with bigger name individuals, entrepreneurs, doing some collaborations. So that's really that. And then I have some exciting travel plans. I'm going to be traveling all over Europe. So that's every summer I do about 4 to 6 weeks of traveling. I just love it because I feel like it adds a lot more layers to your character, adds depth to your character. When I'm traveling, I study businesses. So I try to talk to business owners. I look at, you know, businesses that are really owner focused and ran and the quality of service there versus more chain, larger businesses. And I learn more about what I want, what I don't want. Every time I come back from a long trip, I basically turn my business upside down. And it's always been for the best. It's always been a huge leap forward. So I capitalize on all these opportunities. So yeah, fun travel plans, a lot of growth, expansion, collaboration, and just more of what I do.
That sounds good. I like Puyo Hadari. I wouldn't mind, you know, sitting down with you and talking more business and playing backgammon if you do play backgammon, or just, you know, eating some of your mom's food. She does cook well. Okay, good. Tell everybody how they can find out more about you.
Sure. You can find me on any social platform. It's at Puyo Hadari. And if you let us know you're from Michael's show, we'll do something special for you. We'll throw in a free gift or a free ebook that would help you out with your business, whatever it might be. But just let us know you came from here. And thank you for having me. This was great. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. Lots of value for show. Puyo Hadari, thank you so much.
Thank you, Michael.
That was entrepreneur and business extraordinaire Pooya Hodari. Quote time. This one's just not for business. It's all encompassing. Let your plans be dark and impenetrable as night. And when you move, fall like a thunderbolt. Sun Tzu. Thank you for joining us. And I look forward to hanging out with you all on the next episode. All right. Have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week, we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically, you're going to find it here. All right. Thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.